Welcome to Tales Over Tales 2023, dude.
Yep.
2023.
Seriously. And like the year of January is already over.
Like, the year of January.
That was like forever.
Did this month not feel like a lifetime?
It did. Honestly.
Too much. My goodness. Well, hey, listeners, welcome back. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jordan.
And I'm Abigail.
And welcome back to Tales Over Tales. Like I said, Happy New Year, everybody. Feels a little weird to say that. We're recording on the 29th of January, so already kind of into 2023, but first recording of the year, so this is exciting.
Exciting.
I've missed you. It's good to see your face.
Good to see your face.
Aw, thanks. So how have you been doing? Let's share some highs and lows. What's been going on?
Let's see. I feel like, so December, so the month of January, I don't even remember what I've done really working most of the time. Those have been like, I could say that's highs and lows because it's good to have employment, but then every day, goodness. But it's been good. Yeah. I've been, you know, just kind of hanging out, enjoying the new year. I've made some resolutions. So
look at you. Okay. Do you care to share, or are we going to do that offline?
Okay. So one I can share is that one of my resolutions is to purchase a home this year.
Hey, she's been talking about this for a long time.
It's finally like kind of working out so that, you know, I'm taking the steps necessary to be able to start that process. And hopefully before the end of this year, I will be in my very own home. So that's exciting. So that's one of my resolutions.
Nobody can stay there before me, right?
Yeah, you're the first person. You're going to be my first guest, of course.
Good. Okay. I love it. I love it. Okay.
But what about you? How's your New Year just been so far?
You know, 2023 has been off to an interesting start. I feel like mostly good. My highs would probably have to be just mostly relational. Met a few new people, just continuing to work on, newlywed life, learning a lot about each other. And that's been a lot of fun, even as we've been hitting our bumps here and there. Mm-hmm. Honestly, it's been really good. So I would say that's been my high. Probably my low. I mean, I'm ready to be done with grad school. I know Abigail knows that I have like the worst case of senioritis right now. Mm-hmm. I am, oh my gosh. June cannot come fast enough. I am ready to be done. Oh my gosh. Did I tell you my next class is a data analysis class?
Oh, that's fun. That sounds fun.
What is fun about data analysis?
You got data, you got analysis, put those two things together and it's a good time.
You tell me where you find the good time. Okay.
Oh, I'm just kidding. I think it's the worst. When I had to do it in grad school, I learned that was my worst class. And I was like, I hate it here.
Oh my gosh. No, but just the overall balance of being a newlywed, working full time, going to school. I've shared on the podcast before how my husband and I are very involved in our church, and there's a lot of responsibilities to that that can be a little overwhelming at times. So just trying to find the balance in all of it. So I'll say if that's my low for the month, it's been overall been pretty good.
Okay. Good.
So we're getting there. We're getting there. I can't believe it's already February this week. It's just wild. Mm-hmm. I'm mind blown. Aww. So
do you guys have Valentine's Day plans already?
Not really. It's so weird when Valentine's Day falls in the middle of the week. And I'll be honest, neither of us are super like Valentine's Day people. Mm-hmm. However, being a teacher, my husband does have President's Day off, which is the following Monday. And we have a wedding that we are attending that Friday night, the 17th, following Valentine's Day. So I did actually take the Monday off with him for us to kind of have like a staycation, like a long, you know, just like a long weekend at home together. And outside of going to the wedding that Friday night of our close friends, we are not, there are no plans that weekend. So I think we'll probably do something fun at home, cook together, watch a show or movie. And you know, we like to go on walks, play games. We'll do something, you know, something close to that effect. But what about you and Matt? What have you guys got planned?
We don't have like anything super planned. Like Matt's going to make a nice dinner. We're going to watch a movie because he's like not like super big on celebrating it.
Yeah.
And I'm like not super big, but I still like, it's important to me. And so he and I actually talked about this. I think
did you like drop hints subtly, but not so like,
oh no, I was very direct. I was like, what are we doing? And I want to do something. It's not going to be another day. Like you need to cook me a special meal. I was very direct and we weren't really arguing, but I was like, doesn't it mean something to you? He's like, not really. It's Valentine's Day. Like it's just a day. I'm like, it's more than that.
Oh my gosh. You are so extra. You're hilarious.
Yeah.
Oh, but that'll be nice. Okay. So he'll cook, you'll do a movie kind of a thing.
I'm trying to convince him to watch Pride and Prejudice. He's refused.
Has he never seen it?
He has seen bits and pieces, but he needs to watch the whole thing. It's very important that he does.
That's a very solid Valentine's Day choice though.
Yeah.
I feel you.
Right. It's going to be Pride and Prejudice for Valentine's Day. He just doesn't know it yet, but it is.
I mean, so you heard it here, listeners. We will check back in. Abigail's not recording with us in the month of February, but I will come back and ask this question when you record again with us, probably in March, and we'll see. Did Matt follow through? Yeah. Well. I said, don't worry. 100%. Oh my goodness. Well, let's get started. What are you drinking, ma'am?
I am drinking some Pinot Grigio. Yes, it was going to be Pinot Noir, but I drank all the Pinot Noir last night and I was like, what do I have left? Oh, Pinot Grigio. That's good. It's a white wine. I like it.
You know, why not? Yeah. Why not? Oh my goodness. I love it. I love it. And she is drinking from a wine glass this time.
Ladies, no, I had the wine glass last time. It was just because I don't have a wine opener, but I bought one. And I've held on to it because I've hidden it in a secret place.
I was about to ask, are you just keeping it in your room? You're keeping it in your bedside drawer, aren't you?
I'm keeping it in a secret place. I can't tell you because then it won't be secret anymore. Sorry, listeners. You can't know where my secret place is. But I've got wine. That's the important part.
That is the important thing. Amen.
What about you? What are you having?
Yes. So I had a husband fix up for me a Vucaré. For those of you listeners who enjoy mixed cocktails, mixed drinks, you may or may not have heard of it. It's kind of a Manhattan meets an old fashioned. It just felt very fitting for our conversation today. It felt very connected to the book for whatever reason. It just felt very European. I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
And obviously the book takes place in Europe. So it's one part rye whiskey, sweet vermouth, a little bit of brandy, a bar spoon of Benedictine, a dash of, oh my gosh, I can't even pronounce this.
We could just say it's a bitter.
It's the bitters. Yeah. It's the bitters. Oh, Lord, have mercy. I haven't even had a drink yet, listeners. We're going to take a sip here for a second.
Didn't you do like a practice?
No, I did not. It was only 12:30 in the afternoon here, West Coast time, Miss Charles.
Well, it's two in the afternoon. So this is actually my second glass. So. No shame. I had to make sure it was still good, you know?
Of course. Because you keep it classy, as always. That's the Miss Charles way. Mm-hmm. Well, should we dive into book?
Yes, let's do that.
Oh my gosh. All right. So listeners, if you remember, we are looking at The Alice Network by Kate Quinn. I'll have Abigail start with her thoughts because we had very different feelings about this book.
We did. We really did. I had very strong feelings against the book, right?
But listeners, we were on the phone yesterday putting together our notes, and she shares, and I was like, whoa.
I had some feelings, but yeah, let me just, okay. I guess, basically, the book really takes place in two time
periods,
right? 1915 and 1947. There's two main characters. In 1915, there's Eve. 1947, there's Charlie, And so for the two storylines, okay, I was not a big fan of Charlie's storyline. I don't think she grew much as a character. There were some moments of growth, I'll give you that. But I couldn't really get into her. She gave me spoiled rich girl vibes, to be honest. I'm like, oh my God.
I mean, she kind of was a spoiled rich girl, yeah, though.
Yeah, she gave me spoiled rich girl vibes. I was not a fan of her, to say the least. But Eve, I loved her storyline.
I feel like personality wise, she was very up your alley.
Yeah, I just really appreciated her as a character. There was so much development for her, and just really the themes of her storyline, just like everyday person, everyday woman can do extraordinary things. And, you can really see, you can't really tell a book by their cover, but it takes one person to really see your potential. Yes. And help you bring that out. So I really loved Eve's storyline because of that. I just appreciated overall. I felt that, overall, I felt the ending was a little bit rushed. And we'll get into it a little bit more.
Yes.
But I feel like the things that kind of went up for a while, okay. And then the climax happens, and then towards the end, and then we're just brought down very quickly back to everything. But other than that, I thought it was pretty well written. This is my first Kate Quinn. So actually,
I haven't read her either.
Mm-hmm. So it might be that I just have to get used to her writing style, but yeah, other than that, I thought the book was all right. What are your thoughts?
I loved the book. I mean, I was pretty hooked from the beginning. I felt like this book had all of the things that I am here for. Romance, wartime action, strong female connections, friendships. I was very much rooting for the women in this tale, in this book. And I'm sure you can relate to and connect to that. Something that, we both talked about off podcast was how, just loving that women were a part of the fight. And honestly, too, listeners, something that I was not aware of until reading this book, The Alice Network was a real thing. And one of the characters in the book is actually loosely, but not so loosely, based off of a real wartime spy. Mm-hmm. And it was incredible. Yeah. So I'm with you on the ending feeling like it was rushed and that it lacked a little bit. However, the way that it came together, in my opinion, was good. And I would be open to reading more of Kate Quinn. To your point, I mean, yeah, it could just be a stylistic thing to get used to. I would definitely, pick up more of her books and see. Because something we've touched on this podcast, I think, before is when you follow the career of an author, it can be interesting to see how they progress and where they go creatively. So who knows? But
Anyway, so yeah, I thought it was great. Let's jump in. So first, we should share the book is divided into two parts or four parts. Sorry. Yeah. The way that, you know, and Abigail mentioned, it is also, so it's divided into four parts, and we're also looking at two time periods, two wars, World War One as well as World War Two. So the book starts off originally May of 1947. Mm-hmm. We are introduced to 19-year-old Charlie St. Clair, or Charlotte St. Clair, who has shamed her family. Why has she shamed her family? Because she got pregnant out of wedlock. She
got knocked up.
What's sad, listener, and I guess we will add this detail, she's not even actually sure who the father is either, correct?
Yeah,
right. And we learned that a little bit later on. But something I did appreciate about her character, we learn immediately she's really smart. Mm-hmm. She's super good at math. She's very detail oriented, good at numbers and equations, anything that involves logic or reason. And her part of the book is written in first person narrative. So it is kind of interesting to see and hear things unfold from that perspective. But anyway, so with her mom, with her mother, Charlie is traveling to Europe from America so that they can deal with her little problem.
Yeah. I like Charlie. I would say in the beginning, I like Charlie's interaction, how we find out she's smart, because she's smarter than most men. So I'll give her that for her character development. Mm-hmm. You know, she's able to do maths really quickly in her head. And there was an example where they were in this, I guess, the hotel lobby in, I think, England. And these four boys were trying to calculate tip and they didn't leave anything. And she did it all in her head. And then she told them, like, hey, you did it wrong. You could have at least left a tip or something like that. So, yeah, I like the way that we're introduced to her brilliance.
Yes.
So I think that is really important, especially the time period, 1947, where women basically didn't have any rights and they weren't really seen as smarter than men. They were seen as below. So I just wanted to add that. Like,
that's, they were not viewed as smart. They were not viewed as equals. There's another part later on in the book. I mean, Charlie even goes to the bank. She has her own bank account. She's trying to get money, her own money, listener. And she can't even get money because she doesn't have her father with her. Is that right? I mean, it's just, oh my gosh, it's ridiculous. Anyway, so she is from New York City, traveling to Europe again to take care of her little problem. Mm-hmm. Her mother is French, originally from France. And following this appointment, I keep using air quotes as if listener is going to see this. We're just going to call it what it is, obviously, because her parents, you know, book her an appointment for an abortion. Yeah. And you kind of see the dynamic between her and her parents right away. Her mom has promised her a trip to Paris following the abortion so that, you know, they can kind of repair something of the family's reputation as well as her own reputation. And we also learn then, as we kind of get into the family dynamics, we learn about Charlie's cousin, Rose, who ended up MIA, lost in the war about 3 years earlier. Mm-hmm. Last time anybody in the family had heard from her cousin Rose was in 1944. Rose was Charlie's best friend. And part of Charlie's motivation for going on this trip to Europe, Rose lived in France, and Charlie brings a photo of Rose with her, and she has a letter with an address and a name on it. And basically, she is determined to find her cousin. Mm-hmm. She believes that Rose is still alive. She wants Rose to still be alive. Yeah. And there's a lot. I think you had said something about it when we were talking the other day that you would have maybe liked to learn or hear a little bit more about the St. Clairs, just about the family dynamic from Charlie's perspective. You know, she talks about her brother James that was a soldier in the war. Mm-hmm. He committed suicide, struggled with PTSD. So there's obviously some impact, some massive impact from the war on the entire family in general, but
I would have loved to hear more about that impact, because that information is missing. I think that's really hard. That's what makes it hard for me to connect to Charlie on a personal level, because everyone else, every other character in this book has been directly affected by war and impacted by war. And we learn about that impact of war either directly or indirectly from what we understand about PTSD or shell shock, what it was called during that time period. And because she just seems so unaffected, quote unquote, unaffected by the war, it's really hard to connect with her because, you know, one of the themes in the book, because you talked about themes earlier, is the brokenness of everyone who is, you know, of all these characters. And I can understand her brokenness. You know, she had a brother who came back from the war, was shell-shocked. She didn't understand probably, you know, committed suicide, I think 6 months prior to her being here, if I'm not mistaken. So it's still very fresh.
Yeah.
And so a part of me is like, why is she so bent on finding Rose, right, as opposed to grieving the very loss, like, you know, the very recent loss of her brother.
See, I almost see the two connected, though. It was almost like the grieving process was her motivation behind finding Rose. Mm-hmm. At least that's the way that I understood it. That's how I interpreted. I mean, but I hear what you're saying, and I think I would have liked to know a bit more behind it as well. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we'll get into that maybe in a little bit here. Charlie ends up escaping from her mom, breaking away, and on the streets of London, she makes it to the address that she had written down from the War Office, and she is looking for a woman named Evelyn Gardner.
Yes.
And she knocks on the door. It is pouring rain. Abigail and I have been in London.
Yeah.
We've lived in the Pacific Northwest.
Yes.
We know how that rain can be.
Mm-hmm.
So tell the listener how Miss Eve greets Charlie at the door. A wet and soaked to the bone Charlie St. Clair
with a gun in her face. Well, and wrote in Eve's defense, Charlie just walked up in there. The door was unlocked.
So what do
you
mean?
You just walk up into some stranger's house. That's why she was pointing a gun at her. So yeah, so that's how she's greeted. And Charlie is obviously scared because there's this crazy looking old woman with a gun, like pointing a gun at her. So, and who was obviously a little drunk as well. So,
I mean, Eve has got this terrible stammer. Mm-hmm. She's very just disheveled and drunk. Something that Charlie notices right away as well is Eve's mangled hands. Mm-hmm. Her hands are almost, I mean, would you say roughly somewhere probably between 75 to 80% unusable?
I would say even more.
You think more?
Yeah, than that. Maybe like a good like 90%, because we see like in certain blank spots in the book that, you know, it's harder for her to do certain tasks because of how mangled her hands are. Which, remember that, listeners, that's an important thing that's going to come back around, you know, in part,
that's right,
in part four.
So we learn through the first kind of initial meeting and conversation between Charlie and Eve. Charlie, you know, tells Eve about Rose, her cousin that she's been missing. I'm going to need my girl Abigail's help with some French pronunciations here. Let me tell you, because throughout this book, that was a smidge of a struggle for me. Anyway, where was Rose last seen, Abigail?
So she was last seen in a French town. I don't know if it's a town or a village, but the name of it is Limoges. And so yeah, my pronunciation is not perfect, but it's around there.
Right, yeah, somewhere there. We learned that Rose was working at a restaurant, and she was working for one Monsieur René.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately, Eve is set off by the name.
Yeah.
It's like a light bulb goes off. She tells Charlie to get out. Yeah. Tells her if she's still there by morning, Eve's going to kill her.
Yeah.
But yeah. Charlie ends up staying. And we are greeted the next morning in the kitchen by one Finn Kilgore, who happens to be Eve's handsome Scottish aide. Yes. And we will dive into his background here in a little bit.
Love the man in the kitchen.
Gotta love it. Gotta love it. So from there, we are finally taken back to World War I. 1915, we hear and learn a little bit more about Eve, her background and point of view. And we find out Eve was a spy. Ta-da. She was originally working as a secretary because back then, I think that was probably the only job a woman could hold if she was not married and or had children.
Yep.
And she is recruited by one Captain Cameron. Mm-hmm. And this Captain Cameron had observed her as a secretary, noticed that she was fluent in French, German, and English. Mm-hmm. She was in London, England, at the time, I think, was where she was recruited. Mm-hmm. And from there, she was taken to training.
Yeah.
And this is where she really kind of finds her stride, right? So she's this woman with an uncontrollable stutter, no prospects for marriage or a future. Mm-hmm. And it's an exciting time for someone like her to step into the war effort.
Yeah. So, go ahead. Another thing about Eve that I like, though, is her appearance, right? She's very, like, pretty and looks very innocent. Right. Yes. And so she uses that to her advantage, which is what, you know, initially gets Captain Cameron, like, to notice her.
Yes.
Like, he notices, like, okay, she looks one way at the, like, on the outside, she's just this, like, confused looking innocent girl with a stutter. But on the inside, like, he could see her boldness and her passion. And absolutely. So that's another thing about looks being deceiving. That's another thing that's important, you know, because he saw something in her that she didn't even know that could be useful. So, yeah, I think that's awesome.
100%. So, yeah, she undergoes training. Mm-hmm. She's given an assignment to go undercover.
Yeah.
And she ends up in Lille, France. So from there, we are introduced to the lovely, wonderful Lily. Mm-hmm. Oh, God, love Lily.
Yeah.
And she is our fearless leader of the Alice Network,
yes,
the spy network. Mm-hmm. She is described as this very spunky blonde. She's got a lot of attitude and wit. I do love right away just the relationship between Lily and Eve. It's very cool just to see how Lily kind of takes her under her wing, right? And helps Eve get set up with her new job and her identity.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So Eve has a new name, listeners. What is her name, Maddie?
It's her new name is Marguerite LeFrançois. That's her new alias that she takes on, and she really takes on the persona of Marguerite.
She does.
Yeah. So Eve is this pretty bold, daring woman, and Marguerite is, her persona is very meek and starved and doesn't know anything, basically like a country bumpkin. And she takes it on really well.
Oh my gosh, so good. And in this portion too, we also meet another very important character that we'll get into, Violet. She is also a spy under Lily in the Alice Network. And right away, we can see Eve and Violet do not get along or care much for each other. It almost felt very Mean Girls. Like they were kind of competing for like Lily's affection, attention. They wanted, I don't know. Did you get that feeling at all?
No, not really. I got more Violet was fiercely loyal and closed off and didn't want to trust anyone until she knew like Marguerite or Eve could prove, like, hold her own. Like,
fair. I don't know. I just kind of saw a little bit of that dynamic come out. Maybe that was just the vibes I was getting. But anyway, as Marguerite, Eve starts working at Lalith.
Yeah.
And she is working at Lalith, this restaurant owned by one Rene Bordalon. Oh, God.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Smarmy weasel.
Oh, I can't stand him.
No, that's putting it very nicely, listener. That is putting it very nicely.
Yeah.
So the only way we should mention too, like the only way as Marguerite Eve was able to get this job was essentially to prove she did not speak German. She did not know German. She was not fluent in German. And clearly, I mean, Abigail kind of touched on it a little bit. Eve was very attractive in her day. While she might have had a bit of an off-putting personality or struggled with her stammer, she was easy on the eyes. It was very clear that Rene was drawn to her from the beginning. Mm-hmm. God, just in very creepy ways. So she's offered the job and almost immediately, I mean, she starts gathering, collecting information. She's listening to German soldiers as she's kind of participating as this fly on the wall, right? And earning probably a very minimal living, right?
Yeah.
So towards the end of part one, from there, Eve is in a good space, a very weird space, but good space. She feels powerful and strong. She knows that she's doing her part to help in the war. And that's where we kind of shift back to the 1940s. We're back to Charlie's perspective. And Eve, Finn, and Charlie now go on the search for Rose. Mm-hmm. And Finn is their chauffeur, driving the lovely Lagonda. Yep. His pride and joy. And listener, Finn is not a smarmy weasel. No.
He is not. Mm-hmm. He is the sweetest guy with like rough edges. Goodness. I just love it.
Yeah. Oh, so good. So good. All right. And you want to take it for part two? Abigail, tell us where part two takes off.
Yeah. So part two is that they're on the journey to Paris. And so we start kind of seeing their journey because they're on a ferry. And of course, you know, Charlie's little problem starts acting up. And she's also motion sick at the same time. So she's just not having a good time. But yeah, then we go back to 1915. We learn like Eve is just continuing to gather all this good information at Lalith. you know, and really and giving the information to Lily and Violet to pass on. Lily and Violet really are doing the part, like, really dangerous work because they're crossing borders with fake papers.
Yes.
Yeah. And so that is very, very dangerous to do. But that's, you know, that's their part in the Alice Network. They're accepting the dangers that come with the job. So mm-hmm. you know, all of these women are put in really tense spaces, right? But everyone's pulling, you know, pulling their weight, essentially.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And I just loved the strong female relationships and the opportunity to like see how women really played an integral part of, you know, of not taking down the man. Like, I don't want to say that, but like at the same time.
Taking them down. We'll just call them them.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Man. Yeah. So we return to the 1940s, 1947, mm-hmm. and we gather a bit more information about Charlie's relationship with her cousin, Rose. They were wild kids with this just really beautiful bond. And from Charlie's perspective, they share a lot of wonderful memories together. And kind of the first stopping point, if you will, on the journey for them is going to go see Rose's mom, Charlie's aunt.
She was broken by the war, and you can tell it in her appearance, like where Charlie recollects who she was and who she was at that and who she was in 1947 when Charlie found her again.
Yeah,
and she had lost her husband, I think both her sons.
Yes.
The war. And then her daughter was like, she hadn't heard from her daughter in a few years, but yeah, that you're right. That was the first stopping point in Rose's journey. Once she got to Paris, she went to go see Rose's mom, her aunt. Mm-hmm. And that's when she discovers that Rose left the house because she was pregnant. And so her parents had done something similar where they sent her away to take care of her little problem.
Right.
But she wasn't welcome to come, like she wasn't welcome to come back to the home once, you know, with her baby. Yeah. And so, you know, she said Rose's or Charlie's aunt said like she'd write, but then there was a certain point where the
letters just stopped.
The letters stopped.
Heard
from her. And so one of the heartbreaking parts of that, though, is when Charlie was leaving. And this is the part of me that I feel so angry with Charlie about. Her aunt was like, oh, like, are you going to stay for some time? It gets really lonely here.
Yeah.
And she just left her, you know, because she was so singular minded. But she was angry, understandably. But that's another part where she is not seeing the people who are affected by the war. She's not seeing it. You know, she has a singular focus.
But doesn't she also find out that her parents knew what her aunt and uncle had done to Rose?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think that I think that that kind of fuels a little bit of the anger.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. I do understand. Yeah, that was... that was sad that they couldn't. That was a good missed opportunity, right? To share in one another's grief or pain. Mm-hmm. That, I mean, how many times in real life does that happen to us, though, when you really think about it?
Yeah.
So,
but she left eventually. Yeah. Her aunt's house and went to the next location that her aunt had mentioned.
And as they're on their way, Eve shares more information about her relationship with Renee. Uh-huh. Charlie obviously being very, very curious.
Yeah.
I mean, from the way that Eve is describing Renee from the beginning, we know. I mean, he's worse than a smarmy weasel. Like, talk about office place harassment. Like, mm-hmm. I can't. It's so...
Oh gosh. And then he's like, to Eve, he's like, I want you. Like, and then he like licks her.
Yeah, so if you couldn't tell by this point, we're back in 1915. We have this whole like exchange between Renee and Eve. It's so uncomfortable. Like, it's very obvious by this point, as Marguerite, Eve has no, like, no other option but to go ahead and sleep with him. Yeah. As difficult as that is.
So it was a hard decision, because the alternative was she got kicked out of Lilith, and she missed out on this valuable information. So
at the end
of it, it was a hard decision, but she chose the cause over her own personal, like, I don't like this man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And Lily was a big factor in that, too, as Lily, like, comes and visits Eve as Marguerite. I mean, she, you know, just kind of helps coach her through it, lets her know, hey, it's okay. This is something that happens. You never know what's going to come of it. Maybe you'll, you know, maybe you'll end up hearing more information. So by that point in part two, I mean, from the very beginning, it's obvious that Eve will do whatever it is that she has to do, right? Yeah. In order to serve her country, in order to play a very faithful and integral part of the Alice network of being a spy. Mm-hmm. So we are also, before the end of part two and into part three, we are introduced to present day Violet, 1947. Violet, that was a pretty, that was a crazy scene. Oh man, but they, even Violet or not, not chummy these days. No, not at all.
Mystery.
Oh my goodness. And basically, listener, I mean, Finn, Charlie, and Eve had all decided to visit Violet, to go and see her, because before Charlie had shown up on Eve's door, she believed Renee was dead. She believed Renee Bordelon was gone. Mm-hmm. That it was, you know, until she had heard from Charlie that Rose was employed by Renee. I mean, she had no idea. Yeah. So she learns from Violet that it's not likely that Renee is dead. In fact, very much still alive. This is also the part of the book where we see Charlie's mom return. And how she discovered her whereabouts, I cannot remember. That's not as important part of the story, but obviously, you know, Charlie's mom really tries to convince her to move forward with the abortion.
Yeah. And I have to give up to Charlie's mom, because to look for her daughter as intensely, like, you know, how she found
it, sure,
like, a couple of details, but like, and find her in like this little nowhere town in Paris. She's like she is good. She's like, we ain't coming, like, I ain't coming back home empty handed. We're going home together.
Right. No kidding. And it's clear, I mean, let's just be real for a second, right? Like, Charlie is 19 years old and pregnant. It's very, I mean, it's hard. And I could understand, you know, she really didn't know what she wanted.
Yeah.
And I did like the scene in the book between Finn and Charlie. This is where he really kind of encourages her to make a decision for herself. He says, you know, obviously, you know what your parents want you to do. They want you to take care of this little problem. Mm-hmm. But what do you know? But what do you want? And she's over here like, I don't know anything about being a mother. I have no idea. And yet from the very beginning, at least I got the impression that she didn't feel like terminating the pregnancy was the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
So she tells her mom she is going to keep that baby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, then I think it's a sweet exchange when the last thing she says to her mom is, I love you. And then she gets into the car with Finn and Eve, and she continues on her journey.
And there we go. Tell them about part three from there, Abby.
Right. So part three is we're introduced with Eve's part where we find out that Eve has been sleeping with Renee, Eve as Marguerite, her alias. And she discovers very quickly, I think after the first time, that he shares information with her about what's going on.
Yep.
And like, you know, it's pillow talk and he has very loose lips during pillow talk. And so she's like, oh, well, this is good information to know, you know? And so she's getting information from the restaurant downstairs and she goes upstairs at night and she's getting information from him, like in his bed. And so she's playing a really important part. And so we get to see that in part three where like, Eve's information is very important to their efforts, especially as part of the Alice Network.
Yep.
You know, and so, you know, in 1947, going back to that, Eve begins opening up more to Charlie and Finn, talking about her past life as a spy, telling them more and more about Renee and Violet, you know, all these things. And so for Charlie's portion, once in Paris, she finds a shop and takes on a whole new wardrobe. She starts wearing pants. Like, they're referencing Coco Chanel in this. Like, that's my girl. Like,
I was about to say, did that make your heart happy?
I was like, Coco Chanel, yes. so I like that part because it really represented how she was breaking ties emotionally from her mother
and
going her own path. Like, this was Charlie's turning point. Here, where, you know, her mom, she let her mom dictate what she wore, how she spoke, how she wore her hair, everything about her, and she changed all those things.
And it was cool to see how she became very determined. Like, once she decided to identify her baby as a baby, right? We see the language in the book change from calling it a little problem. And Eve makes very determined decisions. She's going to create a new identity, a new persona as Mrs. Donald McGowan. She's going to be a widow, right? Because back in that day, I mean, to be a single mother, you better have been a widow. Something had to have happened. Like, it wasn't acceptable, right?
Yeah.
And
socially unacceptable and shunned upon. So yeah.
And I mean, Eve and Finn are pretty impressed. They find it really cool that she slowly but surely starts to kind of come into her own. So at this point, we are then back to the early 1915. Eve and Lily take to crossing the border. And the reason that Eve was going on this trip with Lily specifically was because she had very detailed information. And Lily requested that she go to Uncle Edward, aka Captain Cameron, as we've known him, about a German commandant that was set to come by train. But I mean, the plot just took off for me at this point, personally, when Lily is recognized and Eve learns her true name. Abigail, let's tell the listener Eve's true name.
I am not good at pronunciation, but it's Louise de, I think, Bettinis, I think.
So. And Louise was a real live spy.
Yep. So she was the factual person, and there's fictional components to her, but yeah, she was the leader of the Alice Network.
And they do make it, however, to Uncle Edward or Captain Cameron, share the information, and we learn a little bit more about from the very beginning. Actually, we should have shared. Eve kind of has this connection to Cameron. There's this very kind of, they're just very enamored with each other from the beginning. And we learned Cameron had actually gone to jail for his wife. He is a married man. I mean, there's a whole backstory to that that we haven't really gotten into, which is a smaller detail of the story. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I highly recommend reading this book if we're missing details that you don't want to miss, listener. Please, by all means. So they share this information with Cameron. An airstrike is planned for when the German commandant is to arrive in Lille by train. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that is, I mean, we think it's all going to go well, right?
Wow, that's great. They got this information. The war is over. Well, if you know your history, it did not end in 1915. So.
No. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Spoiler, the airstrike fails.
Mm-hmm. Oh, goodness. Yeah. So with that, and it's so funny how there's so many parallels between Eve's and Charlie's life. And it's like clicking in my head right now because Eve learns about why Captain Cameron went to jail. And then in 1947, Charlie learns why Finn went to prison.
Yep. Yep.
So Finn has some anger issues, and this was post-war because he served in World War II, and he would, I think he got into a bar fight, and so Charlie finally learns that about him, and so that just shows that their relationship is growing closer.
Yep, absolutely, which is, I mean, it's cool to see. I liked their dynamic personally. Mm-hmm. Back in Eve's time in 1915, you know, we find out she's struggling because she's finding some pleasure, obviously, in being with Renee. Mm-hmm. She shares this with Lily, who reassures her, says, hey, it's okay, you know, and also Lily kind of lets her know if she thought that Eve would betray her, you know, by any means, of course, they would turn each other in. I mean, it's the way that it works, right? And Eve really starts to see the effects of her relationship with Renee when one of the other female workers there calls her a whore.
Yeah.
I mean, and Eve just goes off and like threatens her. It was, that stung a little bit personally. I mean, I just was like, dang, that's some rough.
My heart dropped in that moment because I'm like, oh my goodness, like this girl knows and all this stuff. And I'm like, what if she like spreads it around and it brings too much attention to Eve? Because she needs to be like, you know, keeping a low profile. But then Eve shuts her down very quickly. She's like, listen.
Oh, hard.
I'll get you fired. Yeah, I'm with Renee and I will get you fired and you won't be eating as well as you're eating now. So watch it.
Ay, ay, ay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, dang. In 1947, the three of them, Eve, Charlie, and Finn, make it to, is it Les Mogis?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. France, and we learn at one point that Renee had actually taken Eve there. They come across the new restaurant that Renee had built there. They learn he was changing his last name. It was now, is it Dumalis? Dumalis.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, moving forward from World War One to World War Two, he was still collaborating after the original Lalith in Lille was closed. Yeah. I mean, it was crazy. They learn from one of the locals there how he killed one of the kitchen hands. He killed a boy for stealing. Mm-hmm. It was, I mean, it was just ugly.
Yeah, and something that you learn is that because there was a small interaction between Eve and Charlie where Charlie was like, why did he feel okay with killing? Like, what caused that shift of Renee where he kept his like a low profile and just was a collaborator, profiteer to being willing to commit murder? And Eve was like, it was probably because of me, you know? And that's like another thing that piques your interest about the entire thing. But, you know, this part is really good because she also asks that same local about her cousin Rose, Charlie does. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So she shows her a picture and the local confirms, like, oh, I've seen her here. Yeah, she's worked here. She stopped working there because it wasn't like a decent like place for any decent woman to live, you know. And, you know, so that gives Charlie the spark of hope that she's getting closer. Each point is like her getting closer and closer to finding Rose. She's like, right. I'm solving this mystery. You know, and, you know, they get back in the car and they're going to another destination. And mm-hmm. So, I think actually before they get back into the car, I think they spent the night in a hotel in that area.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then Eve had told Charlie that she got pregnant by Renee.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and really quickly, back in 1915, Eve recognizes that she's pregnant and she tells Violet, and Violet actually performs an abortion for her because she's not wanting to keep the baby.
That was very graphic, but so yeah. Well written. It was good.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it was good. I was a little worried for Eve because, yeah, not having access to a doctor, and Violet had to do it in like their house, their yep. Yeah, one of their homes. That was mm-hmm. fun.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
We learned that Violet was arrested soon after that. And essentially there's talk of, you know, the higher ups, if you will, from the War Department, including Cameron, that the Alice Network might disband. They're all going to leave their posts, but they essentially refuse. And then this is where from that informant from that neighbor that we learned how Rose was still alive back in 1947, we are taken. Is it Orador Surglaine?
Mm-hmm.
So we travel there, which was what we discover as Rose's last known address. Mm-hmm. We find it deserted, find an old woman there in the church, I think it is, as they're kind of walking around the streets, Charlie and Finn are, and they find out about this massacre in 1944, 3 years prior, that had taken place. And we learn that Rose actually had an alias as well as Helene Joubert. Mm-hmm. So we also learned that Rose did not terminate her pregnancy.
Yep.
She gave birth to a little girl named Charlotte.
Yep.
And they were both killed during this massacre. Mm-hmm. I did not want this to be the outcome the entire time. I literally was like, oh my God, they've got to find Rose.
I did not hold out hope that Rose was alive.
I don't know that I held hope out either, to be completely honest, but I just, oh, yeah. So sad.
But this woman's, like, this villager, her recounting of what happened that day, you know, you can tell that it was traumatic because she remembered even the smallest of details mm-hmm. that day when she was recounting, and you can tell that there was just so much pain. She also lost her entire family that day.
Yep.
And so, yeah, it was really heartbreaking to hear about Rose. Mm-hmm. And her daughter, Charlotte, right? She had named her daughter after Charlie, meaning that Rose felt a connection to Charlie as well. Mm-hmm. And maybe she was holding out the same hope. But I can say, like, I was unexpectedly sad, like, because I was like, oh, man, like, it wasn't the fact that there was the knowledge that she wasn't there anymore.
Right.
At the same time, there was this sadness that she, like, the way she lost her life. And we could, you know, as we're going on through the parts, we'll talk about more on what happened that day. But yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it, oof. So we're transported back to Eve's time in the Alice Network back in 1915. She is still gathering, you know, continues to work for Renee, sleep with Renee. She's gathering information, and essentially she, Eve and Lily decide that they have got information now that Eve has to share. Ooh. That Eve has to share with Cameron. Yeah. So on their way to Cameron, they are discovered by German soldiers. They are arrested at the border, both interrogated. The only reason that Eve is allowed to leave is because they think that she's stupid. Like, she literally plays up this stutter, this stammer as Marguerite. Mm-hmm. They, you know, they call her simple because of her stutter. And from there, I mean, we know Lily gets taken into custody. So Eve and Lily are separated. Eve is able to get to Cameron, shares what happens to Lily, shares the information. Eve and Cameron end up sleeping together.
Yeah.
I don't know how I felt about that. I was like, I mean, did I understand it? Sure. They definitely had a more passionate and intimate connection. I mean, there was not, you know, on Eve's side of it with Renee, it was obviously not lust or love or anything like that. So,
yeah.
Cameron tries to get Eve to stay in England, tries to get her to, you know, not necessarily leave the Alice network, but perhaps to be reassigned, does not want her to go back to Lil, to working for Renee. Yeah. She ends up going back anyway because she still feels like she's got more she's got to do. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. And this is where I found my heart in my stomach, because part four ends and we find Renee has discovered Eve's alias. He's discovered that she is a spy. Okay, can we talk about the invasion of privacy for a second? Listener here, okay, so she goes to Renee as she's supposed to. He had gone into her apartment, into her private room, and discovered her gun.
Yes. Yep. And that was the same gun when she went up to see him when she got back, when she was trying to return to work, that he pointed at her. Mm-hmm. And she accidentally, I think he knocks her down, and she accidentally says something in English, and he's like, and that's like when everything falls apart, where he discovers, and she goes into him, she's like, well, you smell and you're a bad lover.
So. Okay. The banter, it was good. I will say that it was good. Mm-hmm. Listener though, sadly, this is where we learn why Eve does not have full use of her hands. Yep. Renee ultimately tortures her as the collaborator with the Germans that he is. Mm-hmm. He breaks all of the joints in her fingers.
Yeah.
Also another very graphic scene that was not fun to read. Mm-hmm. But she blacks out, finds out he gave her opium. We'll get into that a little bit here. And he, you know, tells her once she comes to and the Germans are there to take her that, you know, Eve told him everything about the Alice network.
Yeah, and she didn't believe it at first, and then he was like, he had Lily's real name and just didn't have information, and so she's like, no, it couldn't have been, no, I couldn't, like, so it's just a really sad scene.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I think he gives her the name Judas.
Yes.
Scene. Mm-hmm. And so she's just broken after that.
And so, then,
and we get to the present day, and I'm gonna let you share this little gem.
So Eve tells Charlie she knows that Rose was also a spy. We find out that Renee had informed the Germans of Rose's connection to the opposition, I guess, if you will, for lack of a better term, and he was the one, Renee was the one that had orchestrated the massacre.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And this is kind of the turning point, even between Eve and Charlie, because here's Charlie feeling like, well, I've discovered, you know, what happened to Rose. I have those answers now. Why would I try to continue going after Renee? Mm-hmm. It doesn't, there's no point to it for me, right? Mm-hmm. And Eve is like, no, there is definitely still a point for you. We can seek justice. We can seek answers, more answers. And now we're into part four.
Yeah. And we start off with the trial of Eve, Lily, and Violet.
Yep.
They're all found guilty and initially sentenced to death. But then their sentence is reduced to being sent to a German prison and sentenced to 15 years of hard labor. Mm-hmm. And Violet, being the fiercely loyal person, she's angry with Eve, and she calls Eve Judas. You know, Violet's very angry with Eve, but Lily, oh my goodness, she's like, it doesn't matter how they came to know
this. How it happened, yeah, how we were discovered, how I was discovered, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so Lily just really shows Eve this amazing grace, right? Mm-hmm. And that's so important. That's such an important part of their friendship. Because if we recall before when she's like, oh, if you betray me, like, you know, it's going to be an issue. But like Lily knows like something happened and she doesn't care. She's like, no, you're my friend.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's like a testament to their friendship. And that's another theme in this book, female friendship and how it can be empowering and really lift you up. And so I really 100%. Like that little detail. Yeah.
Yeah. And as we're brought back to present day, you know, Charlie is listening to Eve sharing these details and she's thinking something doesn't add up, right? This whole time, Eve has been just attacked with internal guilt, shame, all of this stuff because she thinks that she's responsible for their arrest. And she actually reaches out to Violet and asks Violet to look into the case and tells her, you know, no, there's got to be more to this. There's a lie that has to be uncovered. Mm-hmm. So from here, Eve, Finn, and Charlie head to Grasse. Mm-hmm. Where they discover that Renee is hiding out, right? They've kind of been asking locals. They've been trying to figure out what Renee's current whereabouts are. Mm-hmm. They find out, you know, that he was last seen in Grasse. So they make their way there. And we are then transported back again to Eve's time in Siegburg, which was the prison. Mm-hmm. Where Eve, Lily, and Violet were taken. And oh my gosh, this was so, it was hard not to cry. Yeah. Lily became very sick. Obviously, prisons, you know, were not kept in the best conditions. Lily needed surgery. Mm-hmm. There was no sterilization to the instruments used. There was no anesthetic given anything. And Lily dies there on the table following a surgery.
Yeah.
So Eve shares with Charlie and Finn, you know, what the outcome was for Lily, that she died. Yeah. And from there, she's released from prison. Eve is released from prison. And we find out Captain Cameron is the one that tells her originally, you know, that Renee was dead. Mm-hmm. Gosh, which is just so crazy.
Yeah.
I think that Cameron wanted her to believe that he was dead. I mean, it just, you know, he knew that if she didn't believe that he was dead, obviously she would go after him.
Mm-hmm.
100%.
Yeah, but it's that small detail that if he didn't tell her that Renee was dead, he would have gone after him and probably killed him. Most likely killed him. But then Rose would have been alive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like those chain of events that happened. But Cameron was doing it in the moment. I mean, he couldn't have predicted all of that, but he was doing it to protect Eve because he thought it was the right thing to do.
Right. So. Yeah. And then following, you know, present day back in the 1940s, 1947. So they eventually do end up encountering Renee in grass. They've been going to different establishments, trying to figure out his whereabouts. He ends up showing up at one of the restaurants. Mm-hmm. And this is where Charlie confronts Renee about Rose's death. Mm-hmm. He confirms for her that he was the one that informed on Rose. He did help orchestrate the massacre. Mm-hmm. And we also get intel at this point from, or Charlie gets intel from Violet, you know, confirming, yeah, the court records did reveal Eve was not the one that had pulled the plug, if you will, that had sort of caused the destruction behind the Alice network. She, mm-hmm. Eve did not inform on Lily under opium. In fact, I mean, you know, up to this point, like, Eve thinks that opium is like this truth serum, if you will. I mean, really, it's just a hallucinogen. Like, and the way that it's written, the way that it's described, I mean, you can tell when Renee gives Eve the opium. I mean, it's an episode. It absolutely is 100% like an out-of-body experience kind of episode. But Renee had just so thoroughly convinced her that she was the one that had, you know, that had thrown Lily's name under the bus.
Yeah, and there's a detail like in their back and forth between Eve and Renee in the 40s and 1947 where like Eve was like, you just couldn't stand that I was smarter than you.
Again, right? The banter. Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm. And that was like it because she refused to even inform on her friends, even under opium and all this stuff. And he was like, I need to get her. And he told this to her to break her. But in actuality, she was always smarter and stronger than he was.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Yeah. And again, this is at the point, too, where Eve and Charlie, I mean, Charlie just becomes so endeared to Eve. Yeah. By this point, you know, obviously both Finn and Charlie, you know, has shared with both Eve and Finn that she's decided to keep the baby. Mm-hmm. She asks, you know, Eve to be the godmother. She wants to share this information that she's learned from Violet that it was not her fault. Yeah. And actually, a point to listener that we're missing is kind of the relationship between Finn and Charlie. Mm-hmm. They obviously, from the very beginning, you know, kind of strike up this romance. Their connection is built throughout, which is really sweet. Mm-hmm. You know, they go on this really, really nice date, and it's super cute how all of that happens. I feel like that is kind of a side note we'll get to here towards the end because, you know, as Charlie is coming into her own and building this relationship with not just Finn, but with Eve and asking Eve to be her baby's godmother and all of these things and wants to tell her that it wasn't her fault and all of these things. Eve pulls one over Finn and Charlie and she breaks away from them. God, this tough old broad.
Yeah.
Seriously.
She's got a singular mind. She goes to find Renee to kill him. She's like, I'm gonna get this sucker one way or another. And Charlie is the one who finds out that Eve is missing. She's like, oh my gosh. And so she goes after Eve, right? Without even thinking, Charlie goes and pursues her because she doesn't want Eve to do this. She knows she'll get in trouble.
Yep.
Charlie attempts to intervene. And, you know, she, at this point, she tells Eve that she gets to the, to Renee's house and she sees like Eve's pointing. No, I think Eve had been shot at this point by Renee because Renee was waiting for her. He knew he was.
Yes.
Yeah. He knew she was, she would come for him and he waited for her in his home. and shot Eve when he got there, when she got there. And so Charlie comes in to like a Eve on the floor, like hunched over because she'd been shot, and Renee standing there with a gun. And it's this whole intense interaction that happens where Charlie's like, you did this, like, you know, you killed Rose. And
so I thought the scene was so well written. I really did. And listener, we do also learn at this point. So, I mean, Eve goes after Renee with a gun, with her Luger, and she has 7 bullets. And she says, from her perspective, from her point of view, right, 6 are for Renee because she wants to make sure that he's gone. And that 1 is for her. I mean, it's very clear throughout the entire book. There's so much PTSD. There's a lot of different mental illness that happens as a result of Eve's torture by Renee, as a result of her time in prison. And she very thoroughly thinks it out and rationalizes and says, if I take care of Renee and then if I end my own life, Charlie and Finn can go off and be happy, live their own lives, do their own thing, right? But Charlie following after her, you know, she gets into this encounter and intervenes between Renee and Eve. And this is where Charlie and Eve are finally the demise of 1 Renee Bordelone, because after Renee confirms for sure that he was the informant, that he did, you know, orchestrate everything from the lie that he had told Eve, that she was the one that ratted out Lily, and that he was the one that orchestrated the massacre that killed Rose, Charlie's cousin, everything. Eve just plants 1 between Renee's eyes. He done.
That swarmy weasel breathed his last breath that day, and I was happy for it. So,
did you breathe a sigh of relief like I did? Like I feel like
if I let this man go, I'm gonna be so mad. I'm gonna go into this book and finish him off myself if they let this man go.
No kidding. And so from there, and this is kind of where Abigail and I had mentioned the ending feeling a little bit rushed, right? You know, we find out, rather than kind of adopting this new identity that Charlie had originally put together, right, Mrs. Donald McGowan and all of these things, Charlie and Finn actually are deciding that they want to get married. They plan to get married, and Finn will raise Charlie's daughter, you know, their daughter as his own. And it is a very, very sweet ending. Violet and Eve are able to reconnect and repair their relationship. And even actually Charlie's relationship with her parents is somewhat repaired there at the end. You know, Charlie and Finn invite her parents to back to Europe to come and visit them, and they let them know, you know, that they want to get married. I think, and it was so sorry that we didn't touch on this either. I think there was definitely a bit of an age difference there, right? By this point, Charlie has turned 20. I think Finn is like 31, 32. I mean, which not a crazy, you know, age difference, would have probably been relatively significant for that time period. But it is a sweet ending. And then in the epilogue, we find out that Charlie named her daughter after Evelyn. So her name is Evelyn Rose. And it was very sweet. Where did Eve get the money to buy Finn a new car?
She loaded.
Did you miss that detail where that happened? Because
a bunch of like awards, and I think like with that status, all those awards she wins, she gets money.
You're probably right.
And so yeah, so she had all that money stacked up. I think Eve was living life. She was reclaiming those 30 years that she had lost.
Oh my goodness, mm-hmm. That was crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, I loved it. I thought that.
Oh, you went on a mute there. Whoops. But while Jordan's getting back online, I think it looks like you're back still on mute. But yeah, I thought it was really cute. There you go.
Technical difficulties. Keep going.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was really cute how it ended for them, because they each got to reclaim their lives. And so that theme of brokenness that I talked about, like when people are broken, they kind of from a mental health perspective, it's hard to see like a life of like not being broken. It almost feels impossible. So the fact that they all found closure and healing, and each of them, like Charlie, Finn, and Eve, played an important part in each other's healing, and you see how they stay connected.
Yeah.
In the epilogue, I think that's an important part as well, like how friendship can really bring out the best in individuals.
Totally. No, I agree. I liked it. I thought it was great. As we both mentioned, I mean, first time reading Kate Quinn, and I would absolutely read some more of her. So definitely going to have to look into that. But there you go. That was the Alice Network. Yeah. Super cool. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed this one. It was, if you think this episode was long, listener, this will say and should have started off the episode by sharing. I mean, this book was nearly 500 pages. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot to unpack there. Yeah. Rather than splitting this book into two parts, I think it was good for us to try to condense as much as we could. So I know we went a little long today. However, totally worth it. I think this book was absolutely
thanks for sticking with us to the end here while we really went into this.
Oh my gosh. But like I said, I mean, it had so many things, from the romance to the war to the female friendships. Oh my gosh. Couldn't you see it being a TV show?
I could see it being a little series, like a mini series.
Yes. I absolutely could. I thought it was so, so good. But that's what we got for you this month, listener. And so excited to announce that our book for the month of February, I wrote the wrong month down in our notes there, but that's okay. Fixing it now. Our book for the month of February is called The Love Hypothesis by Allie Hazelwood. This was Alicia's pick. Everybody, Alicia will be back for the month of February, which is so, so exciting. And then hopefully for the month of March, maybe you'll get lucky enough, listener, to get all three of us.
Mm-hmm. Yes. You know? That'll be a treat.
Would it be a treat, or will it just be shenanigans?
All of the above.
¿Por qué no los dos? But in the meantime, listener, please follow us on Instagram. We are Tales Over Tales Podcast. You can find us on there. We have an email account, talesovertalespod@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. If you have read this book, please feel free to share recommendations. Like I said, in fact, this book was recommended by my previous roommate. Shout out to Kendra. Mm-hmm. She, oh my gosh, she is an excellent book reader, has so many great recommendations. But yeah, you can find us on Instagram. You can find us on email. Go ahead and email us. I am on Instagram at Miss, that's MS, Jordan Alexis.
And I'm on Instagram at the Charles in Charge.
Sharp. You can never get that right.
I could never. It's my Instagram handle. It's been that for like ever. And I can never get it right. I was stutter.
It's the Pinot. We'll blame it on the Pinot.
Yeah, the two glasses. I finished it.
It's fine. In the meantime, listeners, stay reading.
Stay. stay classy.
And stay drinking. Wait, what? All right, bye, friend. I love you.
Bye.